You know, there's been other truces and pauses and treaties over the years. What's different about this agreement? And is there something in the agreement, Ed, that maybe makes it look like it could lead towards something more permanent?
What's different is that, first of all, there was an immediate fulfillment of one of the key conditions in this truce, which was the release of the living hostages. That was a good faith effort on the part of Hamas that has probably never in its existence made a good faith effort ever. So that's one thing. What makes this more comprehensive, what makes this gives this a better chance of lasting, is that there are a number of concessions on both sides. I mean, there is an explicit part of this agreement that says that Israel will not annex the Gaza Strip. I think that's the first time that the Netanyahu government has made that commitment. So that's the sort of thing that can give the Arabic-speaking world confidence. And they're really going to be needed because they're the ones that are going to put the arm on Hamas to keep up their end of this bargain.
Is it crucial to get all the other players in the region involved with this to convince them that stability and peace is good for everybody, economically, quality of life, everything?
Well, I think some of the strongest testimony to that is the number of world leaders who showed up in Egypt at Sharm el-Sheikh the other day. Look, world leaders, particularly heads of state, they don't like to be associated with failure. They like to be associated with success. The fact that everybody from the prime minister of Italy to the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, all in one place, all at one time, on pretty short notice, which means they had to cancel a lot of things, reschedule a lot of things, that does not just happen. That requires a commitment on the part of heads of state, which not only indicates that they hope that this will work, but they think that this peace treaty will hold, and they want to be associated with something they think is going to be successful.
You've been studying that area for a long time. You've been over there. And you think maybe there's just fatigue in that part of the world that we got to move on? We're going to fall behind the rest of the world in a lot of ways. We need to kind of move on.
I think that's part of it. I think the recent heavy bombs that were dropped on Iran had a lot to do with this. It more or less took Iran off the chessboard altogether. It made them look weak. It certainly degraded their ability. They are the main cash cow for Hamas and for other terrorist groups. They're the main supporter. And if Iran is no longer as dangerous as it once was, well, that allows any number of states, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, to sign on to an agreement with Israel that they might have been afraid to sign on to before.
It also makes Hamas potentially, they look that Hamas is being weaker. They don't have Iran behind them.
That's right. Yeah, they look weaker, and they are weaker. The bombing in Gaza has seriously degraded the ability of Hamas to respond to Israel. They were being defeated on the ground, and that's when you get a peace treaty, is when one side or the other thinks the treaty is the least worst option that they've got.
I'm Gene Marino in the WFIR newsroom. Ed Lynch is chair of the political science department at Hollins University. He's traveled extensively in the Middle East and has written several books about the history and politics of the region. He spoke with WFIR yesterday about the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. How much do you think President Trump's relationship with Netanyahu had to do with this, Ed? I mean, they seem like they have a really good relationship. They kind of go back and forth, almost like brothers sometimes. But how much do you think that relationship helped get this over the finish line?
I think that was very, very important because by all accounts, Netanyahu and Trump had some very, very difficult and very, very tense conversations in recent weeks. One after the negotiators were bombed in Qatar, that evidently incensed Trump, not only because it happened, but because he didn't know about it ahead of time. And so he and Netanyahu had a real set to over that, which might have ruptured a less strong relationship. You can get away with that sort of thing if you've built up some trust and some confidence in one another. And I think that's what allowed Trump to come back a little bit later and say, you know, you've really got to sign on to some of these things. I know you don't want to, but in order to get an agreement, you have to.
You mentioned political implications for this in the region here or worldwide or what?
Well, in the region, a lasting peace between Israel and the Palestinians would change everything. It would allow a number of Arabic-speaking countries to join the Abraham Accords, to normalize the relationship with Israel. Look, Israel does a lot of work already in much of the Arabic-speaking world. They run a lot of desalination plants, for example, in countries where the internal politics is such that nobody trusts the other to run the desalination plants. To be able to do that sort of thing officially and above board is a heck of a lot easier. Here in the United States, the political implications are that this is a huge win for Donald Trump. It makes him look very effective on the world stage. It undercuts some of the criticism and some of the really nasty criticism of him. Look, it's very hard to compare someone to Adolf Hitler when they get Israel's highest civilian award. It helps blunt some of that criticism, which makes him that much stronger on seemingly unrelated matters like ending this partial government shutdown.
I look back at the past, like Jimmy Carter got involved, Bill Clinton, other presidents. This is like the first part of like a 20-point plan. Or thing. Already Hamas, I guess, is balking about giving up their weapons. But how difficult is it to keep the momentum going, Ed? I mean, how do you keep this on track where you can get all the way through this and then maybe get towards talking about a Palestinian state?
It's a long haul. It's a 20-step plan. It's probably more like a 200-step process. And in each step along the way, all of those leaders who gathered there in Egypt are going to have their role to play. They're going to have to pressure Hamas. They're going to have to tell the leaders that if you want to see daylight at the end of this, you are going to have to keep this agreement. The Americans, for their part, are going to have to keep the pressure on Israel and on Netanyahu to follow through with his agreement. So this has got to be a global effort to solve what has been a 70-year-old global problem.
And just to wrap up, and as someone who's studied the area for decades and written about it, is this agreement and where we're at now between Israel and the Palestinians, is it historic?
Yes, it's already been historic because of the hopes that it raised, because of the return of the hostages, because of the commitments that both sides have made. How historic? Well, only history will be able to answer that question. As I noted, it is a long road ahead. Each step on that road, however, cements this into the history of the region that much more firmly.
Dr. Ed Lynch is chair of the Political Science Department at Hollins University. He spoke with us yesterday about the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas and the prospect of a permanent peace in Gaza and the Middle East. Hear this longer listen segment again on our website and Facebook. For WFIR News, I'm Gene Moreno.